Hey there, it's Olivia Ellen Price, host of Bay Curious, the podcast. KQED Podcasts wants to thank listeners like you whose support makes this podcast possible. If you want to help us continue to make great content, visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts. That's donate.kqed.org/podcasts. And thanks.
From KQED.
In the past decade, drag has become a centerpiece of American pop culture. Maybe you've seen RuPaul's Drag Race on MTV. The show and its host have won armfuls of Emmy Awards, and RuPaul is widely regarded as the most famous drag queen in the world.
The time has come for you to lip sync for your life.
Then there's the drag brunches, drag bingo, and more recently, the drag story hour that have become ubiquitous in many cities. But growing attention has also led to growing disdain.
This is inappropriate.
Right.
I'm only 30 years old, but we didn't have drag queen story hour when I was in elementary school. We didn't learn about any of this.
Whether it's love or hate on the national stage, drag is a hot topic of conversation. And you really can't understand how we got to this point nationally without heading to San Francisco.
Drag in San Francisco is crucial to the identity of this city as the cable car.
We thought it was high heel time to take a closer look at drag culture in San Francisco. Today, we're taking a crash course through decades of drag herstory to better understand its larger impact on San Francisco and the country.
Straight people have wigs in this town.
A note, there is some potentially offensive language in this episode. I'm Olivia Ellen Price. Stick around for Bay Curious.
Support for Bay Curious comes from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. Committed to brewing things the right way since 1980, because when you're a family-run brewery, there's no other way to do it. Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, still family-owned, operated, and argued over. And be sure to stay tuned through the end of the show so you can play our monthly trivia game for a chance to win some cool prizes.
Hey there, this is Brittany Luce from NPR's It's Been a Minute. KQED's podcasts like The Bay, Bay Curious, Mind Shift, Right Nowish, and more all tell the stories of the Bay and beyond with reliable, human-centered journalism. They aim to inspire, make you think, entertain, and expand your understanding of the place you call home. Here's how you can support podcasting at KQED.
Showing your support is easy, and you can join Brittany in supporting KQED Podcast too at donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
On any given night in San Francisco, you can step into any number of bars in the city and find a drag queen at the center of the action.
Dinero, dinero, dinero.
Like Betty Fresas at Midnight Sun on Thursday nights. She cracks jokes, lip syncs, celebrates birthdays with shots, and light humiliation. It's a blast. But in San Francisco, our queens do so much more than entertaining bar patrons. They serve their communities through fundraising, political activism, and even by holding public office. Here to walk us through some of that history is KQED's Christopher Beal. He spoke with three of San Francisco's drag icons, starting with Peaches Christ.
What is a drag queen?
A drag queen is someone who likes to use fabulous costume and exaggerated performance to entertain people. And a drag queen traditionally has meant a cis man who dons women's clothes for entertainment purposes, usually pretty fabulous and flamboyant.
There are examples of what we might call drag today dating back centuries. The first time it was actually called that is believed to have happened around 1870. And in the time since, drag queens have evolved from underground entertainment to queer community leaders to international megastars.
We're kind of queer preachers in a way. We create fellowship. We create community. We make people laugh. We make people feel good about themselves. And when the shit hits the fan and stuff needs to be done, you often see it's drag queens who are community organizers and the ones mobilizing to take care of a need.
In San Francisco, drag dates back to at least the 1930s, but this isn't a comprehensive history. The scene is way too vibrant. It would take hours and many, 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 many costume changes. So what I want to do is hit on a few key moments when drag culture left big impacts on San Francisco.
Early drag in San Francisco, it was an art form that actually wasn't seen as that queer because they sort of presented it in a way that was safe for straight audiences.
Remember the opening scene of the Robin Williams movie, The Birdcage? Think a straight nightclub featuring female illusion.
In San Francisco, the longest running nightclub that featured drag was called Finocchio's over in North Beach, and it was around for decades.
From the mid-30s to the late 90s, these clubs in North Beach would feature drag queens lip-syncing pop songs and making jokes for largely straight audiences. This was lighthearted fun, none of the heavy stuff, and definitely no politics. But that was about to shift.
And when that shift happened is when San Francisco really became different and sort of special and unlike other drag communities.
This drag queen named Jose Saria started making noise about gay rights from the stage at another North Beach hotspot called the Black Cat Club, encouraging people to stop living double lives. Saria would grow his influence and go on to become the first openly gay candidate for public office in the United States in 1961 when he ran for a Board of Supervisors seat. He didn't win, but what he did do is reveal the power of the gay voting bloc in San Francisco, and he helped forge a path for Harvey Milk to be elected almost 20 years later. Jose Saria didn't take the electoral loss lying down, by the way. He continued his community work in drag and went on to inspire the creation of the Imperial Court System, which is an international network of charities still in operation today. A few years later, in 1966, drag performers were part of a pivotal moment in San Francisco and LGBTQ history. The night the Tenderloin became a tender box of activity.
Compton's Cafeteria was a late-night dining spot.
A clean, safe, well-lit 24-hour diner in the Tenderloin.
Trans folks, drag performers, sex workers, the community could go there. This was a known place for people to gather.
Female impersonation was still a crime in the 60s, and the police regularly harassed people outside the gender binary. Even in the relative safety of the Tenderloin, which was then seen as a gay neighborhood, queer people were never truly safe. And on one hot August night, workers at Compton's Cafeteria called the police to deal with what they deemed rambunctious diners. Police records from the time don't exist anymore, but a police officer is said to have grabbed a trans woman to arrest her.
And the community fought back.
She responded by throwing a cup of coffee in the officer's face.
It broke out into a rebellion that took to the streets.
Sugar shakers were thrown through restaurant windows, and drag queens were seen beating police with heavy purses. A newsstand on the corner was set on fire. The Compton's Cafeteria riot didn't lead to the changes that Stonewall would a few years later, but it stands as the first known example of collective, militant queer resistance to police harassment in U.S. history.
It is worth noting that these trailblazers existed and that they were real heroes and really brave, and they were trans women and drag performers who were fighting police on the streets of the Tenderloin.
Drag expression was undergoing a huge change during this era as well. In the late 60s, the Coquettes burst onto the scene. And they were as counterculture as you could get and were some of the first to break the traditional cis man dressed as a woman mold for drag.
I guess you could say they were hippies. They would put glitter in their beards and they lived together like a commune. They were an inclusive drag troupe that included straight people, cis women, men, trans women.
The Coquettes became notorious for these wild midnight movies at the Palace Theater in North Beach, where drag performers would sing and dance in the aisles during films from greats like director John Waters.
They were fueled by glitter and drugs and lots of talent.
Divine, the controversial and influential drag queen from some of those John Waters movies, has performed with the Coquettes. And at one point, San Francisco recording artist and LGBTQ pioneer Sylvester was a Coquette. The Cockettes became so popular so fast that the group began to splinter into cliques and eventually fell apart, though some members still perform today. The Cockettes' over-the-top, irreverent, no-holds-barred style of drag would help inspire generations of queens to push the envelope.
Around 1982, HIV/AIDS started to ravage the community.
That's philanthropist, drag queen, and member of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, Sister Roma.
It was scary. Nobody knew what it was. All people knew is that gay men, mostly, were getting sick and dying. I remember checking my tongue for white spots and feeling my lymph nodes. It was like AIDS hysteria.
Americans began seeing TV reports like this one, demonizing the LGBTQ community.
It shows that the lifestyle of some male homosexuals has triggered an epidemic of a rare form of cancer.
In 1987, Roma was looking for a way to help when she discovered and quickly joined this fairly new ragtag order of drag queen nuns called the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. They'd been founded on Easter Sunday in 1979. Two of those early sisters were medical professionals, and as soon as it was announced that HIV and AIDS were sexually transmitted, the sisters sprang into action.
We went out almost every night, went through all the bars, getting condoms into hands, getting condoms into people's minds, into their forefront, because we wanted to protect people and to save lives.
They created the first safer sex pamphlet, known to feature sex-positive language, practical advice, and most importantly, humor. And when they weren't doing safer sex outreach in the clubs, the sisters were, if you'll pardon the pun, raising hell in the streets.
Raising picket signs and bullhorns just to get people to even acknowledge that we were dying, that we needed help. Because there was a real consensus among some people that that HIV/AIDS wasn't an issue because it was killing all the right people. It was intravenous drug users, prostitutes, and faggots. Who cares, right?
There was a time when about a third of San Francisco's 60,000-plus gay men were dying of AIDS, and the sisters became beacons of hope for the community. As AIDS became less prevalent, the sisters' ranks continued to fill with people who wanted to give back, and the sisters have continued to grow in influence and visibility.
Today, we're talking about a worldwide organization with probably 1,000 members.
Easter in the Park with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence is an annual tradition that attracts thousands from all over to Dolores Park. It's a big, boisterous celebration that's become quintessentially San Franciscan. In the mid-90s, after the horror of AIDS began to wane, the LGBTQ plus community in San Francisco galvanized and began to go out like never before. Bars, clubs and parties were packed as the community collectively blew off steam. In 1996, a drag queen named Heclina started a legendary Soma party that put the spotlight on San Francisco's unique blend of drag.
Many stars have been born on this stage, this very, very special stage. I would kiss the stage right now if it wasn't covered with blood and shit.
Heclina, in many ways, was the truest embodiment of punk rock to drag.
Heclina's show was called Tranny Shack.
She created it and proceeded to produce a different show every week at midnight on a Tuesday with packed houses for 13 years.
I have wigs older than you are.
Back when the show was launched, Heclina chose the word tranny with an eye toward inclusivity. It was a slur, yes, but like a lot of slurs, it came to be reclaimed or adopted by the group it aimed to harm.
An irreverent and endearing way to refer to people who fell outside of the gender norm. Tranny back then referred to drag queens, trans people, transvestites, crossdressers, and it referred to every little nuance in between, because between all those things, there's a lot of gray area, and between those things, there's overlap. And what Tranny Shack was a place where all these people could go and did go and be accepted and party and to have fun. And it was wild. It was artistic. It was crazy. It was outrageous. It was drug and alcohol fueled, and it was pure.
Over the next two decades, Peaches saw Heclina become a community leader. always helping to raise money for causes big and small, which was sort of the opposite of her onstage persona.
She presented herself in many ways as an unapologetically greedy bitch.
But that was just a persona. Heklina loved to help people.
She was uncomfortable getting the credit for it.
When Heklina suddenly passed away in 2023, the city's queer community came out by the thousands, as if to honor a fallen hero.
So the event is simply Heklina, a memorial. She would have hated this.
She would have. She would have.
She really would have.
The reason thousands of people showed up for her memorial, it wasn't just because she was a funny entertainer. Yes, that's true. But people showed up in San Francisco because she had created community for them. She was a secret nice person.
Drag is not just about entertainment. Drag is also community work.
Next, I want to introduce you to a not-so-secret nice person.
Persia or Persia, either one works. Trust me, I've been called way worse.
A few years back, Persia was performing in drag at night, but during the day,
I was working at a children's after-school arts program here in San Francisco. So I was leading a double life.
She was approached by a group planning to organize Drag Story Hour, where a drag queen reads a book to kids. The idea is representation, for children to have glamorous, positive, and queer role models and to feel free to play with their own gender expression. This was a new concept, but it hit Persia in the heartstrings. So in December 2015,
Drag Story Hour started here in San Francisco, and I was the first performer to be part of that.
This was sort of a meeting of two worlds for Persia.
I was really nervous because up until that point, I kept everything separate.
But she got up in front of a room full of kids, and she read to them.
So anyway, again, my name is Persia, and I am a drag queen. again, welcome to Drag Queen Story Hour. Thank you so much.
I just remember just being so nervous. I had students of mine with their families come in, and at that moment, everything really hit. I was merging my lives together.
Do you remember what book you read?
I read something unicorn. And then a bear book. I don't know.
Unicorns and bears. That's the takeaway.
Gay.
Jiggly, squiggly, also wiggly. Super silly. Can't stay stilly.
Afterwards, there was this feeling of calmness. And I had never experienced so much joy. And I'm not going to cry, but it was feeling like all my identities are in one place. And that's how it felt when I left. And I was just like, wow, like, it's like, damn, I did that. Little kids have the vocabulary to sort of really identify what's going on inside. And that's so special to me. And to know that now there's 20-something chapters around the world and that I was the first one and that it started here in San Francisco, I'm just over the moon to just think that I am part of that history.
Drag Story Hour has received quite a bit of press attention, and conservative groups have targeted them, even showing up at places where queens are reading to children. Does that make you afraid when you go to these libraries or schools?
Yeah, yes. But I still push forward because I love what I do. And if I don't do that, then what am I going to do? I'm already depressed and anxiety is off the roof. Like, and if I don't do what I like, then I'm just going to go back in that hole, you know?
Yeah. Peaches Christ says the hate drag performers have received is simply a response to progress.
We as a community have existed for many years behind closed doors, performing at night in nightclubs for queer people. We've progressed to the point where these families and these people that are so fear-based don't like seeing us on their televisions. They don't like seeing us on their kids' computers or on their social media. They don't want us in their libraries. They don't want us in their schools. They don't want us at their symphony halls. They don't want us at their baseball stadiums.
It's important to realize that this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Sister Roma again.
You can't take away pride flags and you can't say, don't say gay. Like, we have always been here. Trans people, queer people have always, always been here. And we will always, always be here. they don't know who they're picking a fight with. We have overcome much bigger battles. We fought a plague. We showed the world how to react with compassion in the face of a pandemic that was killing our community. We rose up and showed the world how to respond. We got this.
To people like Persia, Sister Roma, and Peaches Christ, San Francisco history and drag herstory are inseparably intertwined. It's hard to imagine the city without drag queens.
It'd be like taking the city and turning it black and white. San Francisco is full of color and fabulousness, and by removing drag from it and all of its variations, I think you'd really mute what makes it special. This city is run by drag. It's a drag oasis.
Almost 100 years have gone by since those first queens graced the stage in San Francisco. The city and the world have been shaped by those that came after.
We have a transgender cultural district, a leather cultural district, the Castro cultural district. We have a drag laureate, Darcy Drollinger. So many great queer, trans, drag leaders, and so much to be proud of here in San Francisco. And this does remain the beacon of hope to our queer community worldwide.
That was Bay Curious reporter and sound engineer Christopher Beal.
Gay.
At the end of every Bay Curious episode, you may have noticed we always say,
Bay Curious is made in San Francisco at member-supported KQED.
To us, member-supported is the operative phrase there. We are so proud that Bay Curious is available for free to everyone, but it does cost money to make. So here's the part that I kind of hate doing, but is unfortunately necessary, where I ask you to give. 60% of our budget comes from listeners. A lot of people get $5, $10 a month, and it adds up. If you've thought in the past, oh gosh, I really should donate, but you just haven't gotten around to it, first off, I've been there. Second off, this is your sign to make good on those thoughts. Don't delay. Grab your phone and navigate to donate.kqed.org/podcasts. And within minutes, you'll be done and feeling good about supporting shows like Bay Curious. Again, that's donate.kqed.org/podcasts. Thanks.
Bay Curious is produced by Katrina Schwartz,
Christopher Beal,
and me, Olivia Allen Price. Additional support from
Jen Chien, Katie Springer,
Caesar Saldana,
Maha Sinad,
Holly Kernan,
and of course,
the KQED family!
I'm Olivia Allen Price. Have a fabulous week.
Hi, Bay Curious listeners. Are you ready to play May's trivia game? Every month, we read a question here at the end of our episode. You can give us your answers over at our website, kqed.org/baycurious, or just click the link in the episode description. Out of the correct answers, we'll randomly choose one lucky winner to receive a cool prize package with Bay Curious swag and Sierra Nevada goodies. Okay, our question for the month is, the world's longest-running pillow-fighting contest was held from 1966 to 2006 in what Bay Area town? Our trivia quiz is made possible by Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. Good luck!
Hey, it's Glenn Washington from Snap Judgment. And if you love what you're hearing, and I know you love what you're hearing, please consider becoming a KQED member. Get special access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. Plus, you'll sleep better at night knowing you did your part for the community you depend upon. It's in you. Please be in it. Visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to sign up now. That's podcast with an S. Thanks.